Jerry Nixon, ladies and gentlemen.
Great. Hey, hi, everybody. My name is Jerry Nixon. I'm a developer evangelist. I live in Colorado. A buddy of mine moved here from Colorado. He lives here in Orange County now, and I haven't seen him in a long time, so I flew in yesterday. And, you know, it's sunny and beautiful in Colorado. And I get to California, and I'm like, this sucks. God, it's awful. But it's not always like this. That's why it's called sunny California, right? So it's my pleasure to introduce you guys to Windows 8. I'm going to take a few minutes here and kind of level set. I'm a developer evangelist. I get to talk to developers all the time. I get to talk about the coolest things. And I believe software development, you know, it's an excellent field. I mean, would you agree that software development is an excellent field? Wow, a lot of enthusiasm for your own career. Yeah, it totally is. I think software developers have the second best job in the entire world. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, so much creativity, so much opportunity, it's great. Second best, though, right? The first best, without a doubt, is being a developer evangelist. So just, I mean, I'm not bragging, I'm just saying it's the way it goes, right? So I get to do everything you do, right? I get to talk to smart people. I get to engage you guys on hard problems. I get to handle technology that's like cutting edge and it's fun without any deliverables. I mean, it's what a dream. I just take your job and all the bad stuff slice off, and that's where it is. The reality is, here's how I find myself. I mean, Windows 7 is a big deal, right? I mean, you're at a Windows 8 event, but Windows 7 is a big deal, right? With over 500 million of them out there, I mean, it's extremely big deal. Excellent operating system, excellent momentum around it, tons of like solid functionality that we all love and use probably every day. Windows 8 builds on that, of course, but there's a lot of changes in Windows 8. And so here's how I find myself. I'm going up and I'm talking to somebody and I end up sitting next to him and I take out my slate. Here's my slate. So I take out my slate and I say, hey, have you seen Windows 8? And they're like, oh yeah, I saw some screenshots on the web or something like that. I'm like, let me show you something cool. And so I'll sit down next to him and I'll pull it up and we'll just start. Like, and I'll just ease through some of the cool functionality inside Windows 8. Of course, I have to start at some important parts, right? Because a lot of people think Windows 8 somehow deprecates all the functionality of Windows 7, and that's not true, right? Windows 8 builds on Windows 7. Everything that runs on Windows 7, or everything that runs on Windows 7 runs on Windows 8. So if you have applications that you've bought and that you use, then they run fine on Windows 8. If you have applications that you have invested in your company, line of business applications, they run fine on Windows 8. Let's see if I can just nail somebody with a light. I realize I'm sorry. I'll just turn it back. And that's an important part to say that everything that runs on Windows 7 runs on Windows 8. So I'm going to switch to my deck here, and I'm just going to start with this. This tagline is worth burning into your brain, right? Because I can't tell you how often I get this question, and it's totally a fair question. Because you always tend to think that something's going to be lost with the new version, but really it's just building on. And backwards compatibility has sort of been our mantra at Microsoft for the longest time. And we certainly haven't left that behind. So, one of the changes in Windows 8 is the introduction of touch. Right? We've had multi-touch in Windows 7 as well, but touch really being elevated as a first-class citizen right next to keyboard, right next to mouse. Right? We know that most of the users, especially right off the bat, may not have a touch device, so we certainly can't leave them behind and say, well, if you can't touch your screen, you can't use Windows. That doesn't make sense. So, of course, all the gestures that you'll see me show off today, when we're going through different touches and things, and they're very cool, there's mouse gestures that are equivalent for those. And there are keyboard gestures that are equivalent for those. And that's important because we can run on all kinds of devices. So I have this cool slate, right? It's like a laptop without a keyboard ripped off. It's great. This is a prototype device, so I don't know what the real ones will necessarily look like, but I can't imagine they won't be like this. And they'll be, if they're expensive, you shouldn't probably do that. There's all kinds of different things you should and shouldn't do. But I will say this is how we designed it. The screen is wider than you probably are accustomed to in a slate device. Let me just say, I could load this on a laptop, right? I could load this on a desktop. I could load this wherever I want it to be. I'm just going to show the slate here, and then we'll move over to a laptop that I have. But I'll hold it like this, right? Of course, I'll hold it backwards, so I'll look at it. And it'll sit in rest on my thumbs, or on my palms right here, so my thumbs can move into the device. And that's important because as we're doing all of the testing around usability and deciding how to build out the operating system for touch, we had to do a lot of research, of course, to say, a device like this is wider than you might expect, right? A device like this is 16 by 9, so when I'm watching, it's the same size and shape as your HD TV at home. So when I'm consuming a movie or whatever, I don't have to worry about letterbox or anything like that. I have it look the way I want it to look. That's really nice. But then I'm holding it like this, and I want to, too, right? I want to hold it like this. I might hold it like this, but that's a heavy device. I might have a lighter device later, but this device I'll hold like this, and I need to move my thumbs, and I don't necessarily move my hands around. So let me do this. I'm going to jump to a different slide. I'm going to show you this. This is a heat map that shows the average hands, where the thumbs go. You can see the green area, the thumbs are moving around. It's very easy to navigate right there. And then the yellow is a little bit harder, and I can stretch with the red. And if I want to go to outside of that into the black, then I have to actually lift up my hand and go into the device. And that's okay, right? There are going to be a lot of scenarios where that's the way I'm going to interact with Windows or the application that I'm running. That's okay. But the majority of all the interactions I'm going to do, I'm going to hold it like this. And so you're going to see as I demo this out that there are a lot of concepts around the touch interactions that are all geared towards holding your thumbs in a single location or holding your hand so your thumbs can reach out really easily in those green areas. So we pull things in from the left, we'll pull things in from the right, we'll pull things up from the bottom. And that's a big deal because that area is my easy reach area. Okay, so I'm going to switch to this device so I can show you some groovy things. So this is a laptop that swivels around, right? So it's a little tablet-like one, very groovy. And so let's see, a little walking space here. So let's just virtually pull up a chair next to each other, right? I'm like, okay, let me show you something cool. Right? You're gonna like this a lot. And so let me just start with the start. So I'm gonna take my thumb and I'm gonna swipe in from the right. And when I swipe in from the right, it's gonna pull up the charms bar on the right. So let's switch up to there for just a second so that we can see. That's a big deal because this is the entry point to everything in the operating system. So I imagine some of you have installed Windows 8 and are already developing an application, right? And after dinner, we're going to have a hackathon where you guys can go to town. And if you're kind of a newbie to it all and you're a little confused or you just want some extra guidance around it, no big deal. Just come in, and there'll be proctored labs as well that will step you through all the functionality in a Metro app. That's a big deal, a lot of value to you. I imagine there's probably a few of you who've maybe installed Windows 8 but haven't run it. A few of you have seen screenshots of it. Perhaps a few of you who have never seen it before. Right? So just allow me to kind of level the playing field here. So on the right-hand side is the Charms Bar. The Charms Bar is great. It's our single invocation point for everything inside the operating system. And those are the individual charms, and those five charms allow me to do everything. So let's start in the middle, where the Windows logo is. So that's our reimagined Windows logo. And that's the ability for me to launch the start menu. And we'll launch that in just a second, but I want to talk about some stuff first. Those other four charms, they allow me to interact with the operating system. For example, search allows me to search, right? I can find applications that I've installed. But it also allows me to search applications that I have installed inside the data that they have. Let me give you an example. I may have a CRM app installed. I can use this to find files, and I can find Word documents. I can find Excel spreadsheets. But I can also go into it, and I can find individual records inside my CRM data, all by invoking it from one location. For example, look, I'm going to go ahead and tap on search. And so now it comes up with, and it defaults to all the applications that I might want to find. I could type in Office, and it would find everything with the word Office in it. And that's normal, right? That's how we do things in Windows 7. Or I could go down the next level. I could say Settings, and it would filter to only find Settings. I could type Network. It would find all my network settings. I could go down again. It could find my files, and it's indexed the content inside them. Or I could go down again to that list of applications. And those are applications that I have installed that when I search, it's not finding those applications, it's finding the data in them. I could select, for example, Internet Explorer, it would search the web for me. I could select Contoso Cookbook, it would find a recipe for me. And so it's a great way for your application to leverage Windows 8 so that when users are trying to find something or they need to use the data, you're right there, and it's a single and consistent way for them to interact with your system or with your application just like they do the system. That's a lot of power. Let me go back to the charms bar for a second. So I have search, but I also have share. So applications that are Metro applications run inside a sandbox, That means if I can see them, they're running and they have all the access to the system and all the resources that they need. However, if I can't see them, they're not running. They've been suspended. This is going to be important, especially important when we get into the labs, that you handle suspended correctly, right? Because for one, suspended could easily mean terminated, and you want to be able to handle that. But it's important for you to know that the reason we do that is to protect the user, and there's a theme around Windows 8 that we protect the user, we protect the device, we protect the battery, we protect the experience, we even protect other applications. So when you hear about this sandbox, just know it's because we're changing the experience that the user has on Windows, and Metro allows them to have a confidence level in how they use their device, how they use applications, what's going to happen to their device if they install it, if they run it, and what it does. So share is a big deal, because share is the charm that allows two applications to talk to each other even though they're sandboxed away from each other. Share also allows an application to talk to the operating system itself. And we do these through contracts. And so, for example, I'll have a share contract. I could have a print contract. I could have all these different contracts that allow my application to say to the user, hey, my app needs to do something. I need to talk to the webcam, for example. Is that okay? And the user is always the one in control. And your application is the one that's always, well, subservient's the wrong word, right? It's obedient, I guess. It's what the user needs and the user wants. Right? If they don't want you to access their files, then you won't access their files. And that's important because we want to give a level of confidence to the user. All right, let's keep on going. So the charms go on down. Another one is devices, and devices is cool, right? The devices pulls up, let's say I'm on my home network, which is not true right now, but let's say I am. I'm on my home network, and I have a DLNA-supported television. Right? That's not uncommon. It certainly won't be uncommon soon. So DLNA, right? So a DLNA device allows me to stream to it. I may have speakers that have DLNA support. I may have a receiver that has DLNA support. And allows me to be, let's say I'm on a web page. Let's say I'm on YouTube and I'm watching a video and it's that hilarious one with the cat. You know the one? The one with the cat? That's a good video too. Hang on. That's a good video. Let's say I wanted to share it, right? And so I'm having a party, and I found it. I found the one with the cat. And so I can say, I can swipe to the charms. I can say devices, and there's my TV. I can say, and I've already got it on Internet Explorer. I'm already watching the video. I'm ready to go. It uses the image tag and HTML5, so it's built in. I say share to my TV, and there it is. And everybody is just like on the floor, right, because of that cat. Man, that's a good video. Okay, so I could also stream my music if I wanted to, and I could control it as if this is the remote control to my receiver. I could control it as if this is the remote control to my television as I'm pausing and fast-forwarding movies as well. So Play 2 is a big deal. Then we also can go down to settings, and settings allows me to interact with the app like from a control panel point of view, right? And so let's go ahead and do that and just take a quick look. So I'll start here, and you'll see this is a good deal because at the top, you'll see where it says apps, it's blank. But if I had an application open, let's say I was in my CRM application, and I go to settings, that wouldn't be blank. Those would be all the settings, the options, the about, everything that I would want to engage deeper into the application through this. So there's a single point of invocation to access everything inside the operating system, and there's a single point of invocation to access everything inside your application too. So around applications built in Metro are the Metro guidelines, and they're a big deal. They're kind of the first time we've really gone to town on giving developers real guidance on how to build applications. And they aren't technical guidelines so much as usability guidelines and design guidelines that allow us to say, if you're going to build a Metro application, here are some of the things you need to do to make sure it's an excellent experience. Here are some of the things you need to do to make sure that it leverages all the pieces inside Windows 8 so that it can be the best it can be. Here are some of the things you need to do so that as users go from application to application to your application, it's a consistent and positive experience for them. It's a focus on usability. I mean, I say we've never really done it before. I mean, think about it. It used to be like we would release the next version of Office, and then we'd all copy it. That used to be the guidance, right? And then the next version of Office, and we'd all make it look like Outlook, right? And how many apps look like that? Which is totally fine, by the way. I've made them myself. And it's because it's a great usability model. But this is a different usability model all the way around, because Windows 8, because we've elevated touch, because now we have Metro that is geared towards a touch-first experience, we have these guidelines to say, okay, you're going to build the application. Don't go copy Office. Use our guidelines. Build your applications to certain specifications to use the correct pieces. So we use the term win as one. So you can win as one. So you can leverage other applications that are installed. Like if we go back to share for a second, when I share out, I don't necessarily know what the user has installed. So let's say I'm inside my cookbook and I'm looking at a recipe and I love it and I'm ready to share it, right? Because it's good. I mean, it's hard to be excited about a recipe. Let's just go with recipe for a second, right? Let's just say it's a pizza recipe. And so I say, okay, share it out. As a developer, I can create a custom payload so I can go to an application that's waiting for me, right? And I can make it look however I want. However, I don't have to. I can make it generic as well. And I can share that out and say anybody can take it. I want to be able to email it to my friends. Or I want to be able to tweet it. Or I want to be able to put it on Facebook. Or I want to be able to put it on Pinterest, right? I don't have a Pinterest account, by the way. Not that anything wrong with that. I just don't have it. Well, here's what's important is, the recipe app doesn't know anything about Facebook. It doesn't know anything about Twitter. It doesn't know anything about mail. All it has is the share contract that allows me to reach out and take advantage of whatever the user does have installed. That's what we mean by win as one, right? Because now I can leverage what other people already do. If I need to save a file to SkyDrive, I just share it out to the SkyDrive and it saves it for me. That's a big deal. Because now I have tons of functionality I didn't have before. I don't have to reinvent the wheel over and over and over again. That really leverages the single point of invocation, because the users have a consistent experience when they're trying to do the same task over and over again. And we leverage a charms bar so we can have that single point of invocation to interact with your app as well. Interact with settings. Interact with search. So don't ignore the guidelines. I mean, not only are they important to give the users an excellent experience, but they're important really to get certified in the store as well. Okay, let's look at something else. So, actually, let's back up just for a second. I'm going to go to the start bar for us. Let me get swipe over, go to start. I'm going to open up, and I'm going to lock. So this is probably where things really start, right? In fact, they would probably start one step before. They'd probably start with it off. So let's talk about off, because off is special in Windows 8 too. If you've used Windows 7, you know we have resume. And resume is like incredible, right? We have standby, which has resume. And standby is incredible, right? It allows me to take my application, suspend it up into RAM, close the lid of my laptop, let's say, and know that by the end of the day, I can resume it like that, and I'm still going to have battery life to go, right? I mean, that was a huge, huge win for Windows 7. And hardware innovations have come along and made it even better. So Windows 8 still has standby, but we've changed the name because we've changed the way that it works. We have connected standby. Connected standby is special because it still has that battery life of off, right? That expectation of battery life when the system is off. However, if you think back to Windows 7 for a second, while it was suspended, it literally was asleep, right? I mean, it was just kind of sitting there waiting for you to resume it. And that's all right, except for when you came back in, everything was at the state that you left it whenever you had actually suspended it. So connected standby is different. It still allows you to stand by. It still gives you that same battery life. In fact, hardware that's certified to be connected standby, for connected standby in Windows 8, drains as little as 5% battery life in 16 hours. It's incredible. It's an accomplishment in the software, for exit events to be short, and many other things. But it's also worked together with hardware innovations that allow us to really take advantage of what's going on in the industry, as well as push the industry a little bit as well, to make sure that we can offload certain work. So that here's what's special about it. I can suspend, and I still get the battery life I expect while my applications remain connected and up to date and their data is fresh. So that's insane. So think about that. I'll suspend my app, I'll suspend it, and then 16 hours later, 5% of my battery life later, I'll turn it back on, and now everything is fresh, right? Nothing says, hang on just a second, here's my spinner, just watch it for a while, right? That's not the way it works. Connected standby is unbelievable. Okay, so here's off, right? And so off gives me a lock screen. This is my lock screen, tells me the time, tells me the date. Next to the time, you see it has my next calendar event. That's because I selected calendar to be my main lock screen app, but I could pick anything I want. Let's go back to CRM for a second. I could pick CRM. I could pick my Facebook app if it supports it. Whatever it is, it brings it up to me so I don't have to log in order to get the latest little bit of information. And that's a big theme in Windows 8, that it brings the information to you so you don't have to go work for it and dig it out. Then below the clock, you can see, you can see that it says, what my battery life is, whether or not my WLAN is connected, and what strength is. You'd expect to see that, of course. But then beside those, I can have up to 7 others. So you can see the number 1 there is, that's funny. That's my email client told me I have 1 new message, but the little message isn't showing up right next to it. It's not a big deal, but I can pick up this 7 different apps, including apps that you write. And each of those has the ability to bubble up limited information, but still information to me to tell me or draw me in to say, look, it's not worth logging in. It's not worth it, right? Whatever it is you're waiting for, it's not here already. Maybe it's my CRM app, you know? No sales have been made, there's nothing for you to do. Maybe it's my ticketing app. No new tickets, you're cool, just leave it alone. Or there's 4, you know, come quick. And so I can log in. And so, and I do log in, so I have different ways of logging in. So this is pretty fun. I have password. You would expect to see a password whenever you log into Windows. That's a pretty typical way to log into Windows. But I also can use a PIN now, any PIN that I want, numeric PIN. But perhaps one of the cooler things that's in Windows 8 is picture password. Picture password is totally customizable. You can pick whatever picture you want. I could select a picture of my kids, let's say, and then I can start drawing on that picture. And I could draw a circle around one of my daughters and a line through another and a line through another and connect them however I want to do it. And that drawing is my new password. And think of how touch-friendly it is. What a pain it is. Even this, a pin is going to be great, right? And so I'll go in and I'll type the pin and I'll just say my pin is a very difficult 1111. Right? It's the imperial pin. And so... But now I could also go to, if I want to, a picture password and make it a smooth touch experience for me. Never have to worry about a keyboard showing up or not. Little innovations like that really make a nice touch experience for users. So my default drop spot here is the start menu. So let's talk about the start menu, because the start menu is way different than it is in Windows 7. For one, it's big. It takes up the entire screen from edge to edge. Is it just the start menu, and I can go back and forth, and whatever I have installed shows up in the start menu if I want it to, because it's fully customizable to me. I can take off whatever I want. I could go into different tiles, because they're not icons, they're tiles. I can go into different tiles, make them smaller or bigger, whatever suits me, and really this turns into be my dashboard. But what's a dashboard without data? Nothing. So here's what's beautiful. These tiles are alive, that's why they're not icons. The data is coming to me. So when I'm looking on the side here with weather, it's telling me what the weather is. I don't even have to go into the application. Right? This is that recurring theme of the data being brought to the user. So now I can look here, I can say, I don't even need to go into the application to see what the weather is. Now maybe I want to. Maybe I'm curious what the pollen count is or something specific like that. And that's cool. But it also saves me a lot of work by not having to do it. I could see the stocks above it, what's happening in the market right now, so at a glance. And I can stack different, or the developer can stack different and queue up to 5 different views of their tile so that I can see different data kind of cycling through. Again, it's just, this turns it into my dashboard. So it keeps me from having to go into the application. But let's turn that around for a second, because this also allows the application to draw me in if I have to. So think about from your perspective, you're a developer and you want to make this as valuable as possible. And you're like, look, the key data that I know that you want and love, I'm going to put on the tile and it'll be there for you. Just use my app, right? But every once in a while, something special happens. Maybe it's a storm warning for the weather app. Maybe it's a change in the stock market. Maybe it's something in CRM that you want to be able to say on your tile, alert, right? Hey, be aware, this has just happened. I'll change the color. I'll change the image of the tile, perhaps. The text, the little glyphs at the bottom I could change. Either way, I can draw the user into my application that way instead of just saying, what would I do with an icon, right? Like, man, I hope they remember to click it. I'll send you an email that says, go click my icon. It's totally not that anymore. Now I have a dashboard that I can totally action against, and I can go dig right into it. So let's run some fun stuff, but before we do, I want to do this. I am going to, this is my presentation, and I'm going to end my presentation just for a second, because I want to show you the desktop. So if you're a Windows 7 user, you know about the desktop. And we know that applications that run on Windows 7 or run on Windows 8, right? And so we still have a desktop. I mean, we have to have a desktop. I can't tell you how many times I've been showing Metro, and I've forgotten to show the desktop, and the guy I'm sitting next to literally is like, well, what about my apps, right? God, it sucks. I have to do everything. No. We still have the desktop. We've all spent 2 decades of our life learning how to be proficient in the desktop. It's still there. Now we have Metro in addition, because Metro is the place where the battery is protected, and Metro is the place where touch is first, and Metro is the place where we've given guidance so applications have excellent experience, and there's similarity in as you go from application to application, and everything starts off the start menu. But I want to just drop to the desktop, right? I like dropping the DOS. It's just the desktop. All right. It's worth saying because you wouldn't believe how many times I hear it. All right, so I'm going to go back to my start menu for a second. And I want to talk about one quick thing that's cool before I jump into an application. And that's I could have a lot, right? I mean, this could go on and on. I mean, I could go back and forth, and it's kind of short here, but I could have 100 applications installed. There's nothing to stop me from that. I could have 200 applications installed. And as much as I love to scroll, and I love scrolling, after a while, you know, you're going like this, and it's kind of frustrating because you lose kind of where you are. And so we've introduced semantic zoom, and semantic zoom is a little different than optical zoom. It's not like you're in a camera and you're making things bigger and smaller. It actually changes the context of the data that you're looking at. So I can do a quick pinch zoom, right? So I'll do like a pinch zoom, and see how I'll just do it real in and out really slowly. So as I do that, you'll see that the icons are actually changing to represent differently for me. And so I'll drop it down. And I can see everything's grouped together. I can go and I can select individual groups if I want to. And just imagine this goes on and on. So picture your application. Your application is going to have tons of data, maybe. And if it does, the user needs a way to navigate from both the trees and the forest, right? They need to be able to back up to the 50,000 foot view and say, okay, how do I get into that one piece of data? So I can go over to apps and I can select it and it navigates me over to the apps. So from that point forward, I have a context to move from. And I could zoom back out again, and I could go to the first one, and then it would navigate over there for me as well. So I'm not really changing the data. I'm just looking at it differently so I can see it very quickly. It helps me to navigate through very long lists really easily. Anyway, so let's run an application and have some fun here. So I'll run so this is the finance app. And so I'll scroll through, and we can see that there's a lot of data for me. And so just like we were talking before, I can pinch zoom, and it'll change the context of the data so that I can see that it's all laid out by category. Then I can go into the individual one, and it'll navigate to that part of the list. That's valuable. Okay, so let's run another application. So I'll go back to start, and we'll say I'll open up Solitaire. And so without a doubt, this has to be the most successful product that Microsoft ever made. Right? I mean, if my mom is any gauge, then it's played all the time. Number of hours spent in it is incredible. Okay, so remember earlier we were talking Metro applications, only the one on top is running, all the rest are suspended, right? That protects my battery and so many other things. And if I want to talk to it from, say, Solitaire, which I wouldn't, but if I did, I could use Share to talk to one another. But there are going to be those cases where two things need to be open at once, right? It's just, we multitask in our brain. Let's enable that. And so I'm going to grab the application from the top middle, and I'm going to drag it down, and it'll be somewhere where I can move it then. So I'll go ahead and do that so you can see what I mean. So now it's at my disposal to put wherever I want. Now if I drag it all the way to the bottom, it'll just close the application for me. That's a nice little gesture to know. So I can just kind of swipe all the way down the middle. just close the application. But here I have it, and what you can't see on the projector is, as I go from side to side, a little line appears. And it's basically saying, you can put it on the other side of the line if you want. So I could just let go, right, and it takes up the full screen. Or I could grab it again, and I could drag it to the side, and it'll just fill what's on the side. So before I do, let's look at it. It's laid out like a normal solitaire game. And I'll drag it over, and I'll release. And so now it only takes up that small part. So this device is 1366 by 768 in width, right? That's our 16 by 9. Now I have two areas. I have the area on the left and the right, so I have the snap view on the right, which is 320 by 768. But then on this side, I have 1027 by 768, a resolution I'll bet many of us have heard before. That's really interesting. So we call that the fill view, and the fill view is where your application, when you build it, and this is in the guidelines, says you need to snap beautifully because the user might snap your application at any time. And so you need to be able to handle the snap view, you need to be able to handle the fill view, and you need to be able to handle full screen. Let's go ahead and see this played out. I'll open up our finance here. And so this is probably, I would say this is a standard day trader's desktop right here. Right? And so here I am. I can go through my different funds and whatever it is I want to look at. Maybe I've got a different application I want. And meanwhile, look what's happened to Solitaire. It's completely reoriented itself to be vertical instead. So here I'll scroll left and right, and then change of priorities. Right? I've had a personal epiphany. Things have changed. I'm going to just drag this over, and now I'm just going to have more fun in my life. Right? So what's valuable here is just to see that Solitaire knew it just snapped, and so it just changed to be horizontal again. And so did the application here, so I can see that it's scrolling vertically now because it knows it snapped as well. So there's a couple things. As a user, just know that I can run two applications side by side. That's nice. It's really nice. But also know that as a developer, when you build an application, you need to snap beautifully. You need to be able to handle this because you can't say, we don't support snap. Not only is it in the guideline, it's important for good user experience, but it's also important to get certified in the store. Okay, so I'm going to close Solitaire. And let me bring up Weather. Weather's another great application that, you know, it snaps really nicely as well. It's really clean. But let me swap now back and forth. It's just fun to open and close stuff. I mean, it's just nice. It's fluid and clean. At the top of Solitaire is a very cool feature. Applications that run in Metro can leverage Xbox Live, right? So there's a suite of games that use Xbox Live. And now they are associated to my account. When I typed in that PIN, when I do a picture password, whenever I type in my password, I'm logging in to my Microsoft account. My Microsoft account, previously known as Windows Live ID, is my connection to my social networks so that everything is single sign-in for me. So I can go to LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter, but also so I can access Xbox Live, so I can access SkyDrive and all the other assets that we have in the cloud. That's really valuable for me because I'm going to log in as this user when I go to another device too that's running Windows 8, and I'm going to have the exact same experience because not only are my settings and not only are my files not only are my game tags and all those things stored in the cloud, but so are my settings. I kept getting ahead of myself. So that as I change my background to a certain picture, as I change my font size to a certain size, as I change, you name it, the operating system has synced that to the cloud for me, and I can roam from device to device seamlessly and effortlessly and have a consistent experience as I go from each one. That's really nice, right? I mean, we certainly don't have that yet, right? This is going to be an excellent experience for users, so they don't have to think to themselves, okay, so is this the one where I put in that extra little setting to tweak the whatever it was, right? All of those now are up in the cloud, and as a developer, you have access to the exact same functionality. That means Windows 8 roams from device to device through the cloud easily, right? And your application can too. There's no reason why my background changes to Windows 8, but when I go into your application, every device is just a little bit different. Well, why do that? Right. We can roam to the cloud natively now inside your application. It's all exposed to you through Metro, and you can do it just like we do and give the same excellent experience to the user. I think it's nice. I think it's very, very cool. Something I've been looking forward to for really a long time, and I think a lot of us have built it from scratch. We know that this is a valuable feature, and so we've built it into our application. We have our own cloud or whatever out there, and we sync for the user, but now it's all part of the operating system, so every application can have that expectation. I think it's cool that Xbox Live is part of Solitaire. I mean, it'll help my gamer number like go through the roof now. Maybe. Okay, so we talked about swiping, right? So this idea of swiping from left and right because I'll be holding the device like this is a big deal. And you may or may not have seen that I can swipe, of course, from the right like we did for the charms, but I can also swipe from the left. And when I do, all the applications that are running are like a deck of cards stacked over to the side. And when I swipe from the left, it's really just bringing the one that's on top of the deck over so I can decide what to do with it. And remember, just like when I was snapping, I can decide if it's going to the left or the right or full screen or whatever. So I'll bring it over, and so I can see weather. Remember weather? I just had that open. So I just brought that over from the back stack, and I can decide what I'm going to do with it now. And so I'll just replace Solitaire with it. And then, of course, Solitaire's on top of the stack now, right? Because it just got swapped out. And I could bring it back. And depending on how many different things, I can go through all of them if I want to. It's an easy way for me to quickly access whatever is just stacked there waiting. It's like Alt-Tab for your finger. I can also swipe from the left and swipe right back. I'll do that real quick. And it kind of shows me everything that's right there waiting, so I wouldn't be surprised. I can grab them off the list directly that way. That's kind of that deck of cards. Okay, so I can swipe from the right in order to get the charms. And we need to know that the right and the left are reserved for the operating system. So there's nothing that you can swipe from the left or the right in your application. Now, you might build something so that you can swipe from the right and get it in your application. Just know that's awful. Because it's reserved by the operating system. This is a consistency for the user to be able to interact with not just the operating system, but your application. So if the left and the right are reserved for the operating system, we know there's two other sides, and they can be reserved for your custom application. So the bottom is the most common, and we call it the application bar, and I'll swipe up, and the application bar is basically our menu, right? Metro doesn't have menus otherwise. Metro doesn't have, certainly not a ribbon, right? And so this allows us to put commanding inside our application one way or another. So let's talk about the bottom for a second. On the bottom, I'll have an application bar, and it'll have command buttons on the right that are intended for my entire application. Right? They're global commands. And you might think I'll run out of space, and if you do, you just use flyouts to let them go vertically as well. Right? And so you can make it bigger if you need to. And then on the left-hand side, it's contextual based on whatever I'm in. So if I'm looking at a photo, then I might have contextual buttons on the left that talk about cropping and zooming and things like that. It's pretty nice. So, again, these aren't the things that, I mean, this isn't like bringing down the hammer. That sounds like it's, you know, this is not a global command. It should be on the left and not the right. The guidelines are meant to allow you to have a consistent way to build an excellent application. So, when we see the guidelines, and there's a whole session coming. In fact, today is chock full of developer junk. I mean, it's beautiful. It's nerd candy all day long. Going through application design, going through the details about the store, going through JavaScript development, going through XAML development. As you see all day long, there's so much to it. I wish I could show so much more than I'm going to be able to show you now. Right? Because it's such a rich experience. There's so many innovations. There's so many features that you'll be able to enjoy, and the users are going to come to love Windows 8. Just because of what it offers that way. And your applications will expand that ecosystem. Okay, so there's a application bar at the bottom, but there can also be an application bar at the top. So let's see, Internet Explorer is a great example. So if I had Internet Explorer open, I would have a command bar at the bottom, which is where I'd change my URLs, where I'd refresh, where I'd stop and go back. And then at the top, I would see all the tabs that I currently have open. So the top is for immersive navigation inside your application. There's purposes for everything. Again, you can provision it however you need to for the purpose inside your application. Just know these are the guides. Right? And so, again, our goal is consistency as users go from application to application, but at the same time, we don't want to take away your ability to innovate. We don't want to take away your ability to differentiate. We know that your application might be special. Everybody's application is special, right? We know that your application is special, and that whatever it's going to be doing might not fit every guideline, but here are the guidelines so you know, right? Straying from the guidelines are okay as long as it's intentional. Okay, so it's worth talking about one more thing. We were talking about connected standby earlier, and connected standby allows you to have your machine off while your apps are still operating. But at the same time, I said, if your application's in the background, then it's not running, it's suspended and doesn't do anything, right? Because we're protecting the battery and the user's experience. So it's important to talk about what are the options to update your tile? What are the options to keep your data fresh? What are the options for your application to connect to the internet even when it's not running? And there are actually quite a few. And so let's go, let me navigate for a second back to my desktop and open up my PowerPoint because I want to show this to you real quickly. Boy, it's tricky, man, to be able to hit the, you got to hit it with your finger just right. Current slide, there we are. And so, got to go backwards. Nobody read those slides. Okay, that's my punchline. It's not really, but hang on a second. I'm going to navigate out here. Let me just back up so you can see it directly. There we go. So toast notifications are a great way to talk to your user even when your application isn't running. So toast notifications, and let me just scroll up just a hair so you can see what I mean here. I just want to scroll up a hair. So just imagine this is my screen, the orange area, and on the top right I get this toast that flies up, and it's totally transient, right? Comes and goes, but it allows me from my application to send some sort of notification to the user so they know their download just finished, or the tweet that they've been waiting for finally arrived, or whatever it is, right? I can do all kinds of neat things with toast while my application is running, but I can also do a lot of neat things with toast while my application isn't running. So from the cloud, I can send toast messages to the user, and we route it to the user so that they can get a toast message, and that will draw them in just like a tile would into your application. So they can say, hey, that important stock that you've been watching has just done whatever. And so here it shows up, and so I get this couple little seconds of a message, and it's really a neat way for me to talk to the user. And of course, they can swipe that right out of the way, right? And it's gone. And I can also do that with background tasks. And so I can run applications even when they aren't in the foreground because I can have a background task that executes periodically that allows me to update my tile, that allows me to send the toast notification or do whatever it is I need to in the background to keep my data fresh and keep my application still useful to the user. I do want to talk about just for a second chipsets. So we talk hardware is a big deal, right? So many innovations around hardware that Windows 8 takes advantage of and helps push to the next level. ARM is a chipset as well. And so we've run on Intel devices forever, right? And ARM devices, there's tons of them out there. There's tons of millions. And so now Windows will run on the ARM chipset as well that broadens the hardware ecosystem so that now the incredible breadth of hardware, right? The incredible breadth of hardware that we already had around the Intel architecture, from rugged devices to like high-powered desktops to the one you sit and just hold on your couch, right? Now we just broaden it even more to all the advantages that ARM brings as well. That's around form factor, if that's around battery life, whatever it is. It's Windows all the way through, and what's important is Metro no matter what. And so you don't have, as a developer, have to think about that. Build a Metro app, let Windows do the rest and worry about the architecture for you. A lot of power and importance there. So you still are a developer. Microsoft developers know that it is Visual Studio, the premier IDE of the world. Of the universe, right? It's incredible. And so we've retooled Visual Studio. Visual Studio 11 and Blend are now ready for Metro development as well. And so developers, Microsoft developers who already know Visual Studio, other developers who aren't Microsoft developers, they get to embrace Visual Studio. And there's so many pieces to Visual Studio that allow development to be able to unit test, right? To be able to debug, of course, to be able to integrate with source control and lifecycle management and be able to simulate and emulate and be able to step into and monitor performance, tune. Visual Studio is a powerful suite that's been retooled and made for Metro developers, and now it's ready. And then, of course, later in a couple sessions, we'll talk about the store, and the store is a big deal because, you know, there, with 1.2 billion Windows devices, we've got a lot out there, right? What an opportunity. And so right now we're going to talk about innovation, not just around hardware, but now that some of our software partners in the area have come up with, they're going to showcase some of their ideas, and we'll be able to see firsthand some of the first steps towards Metro applications. So here's Kevin Boyle. He's going to introduce some of our partners and walk through some of these applications that we can enjoy.
Thanks, Jerry.
You bet.
So Jerry, before you go, you did a nice job of explaining AppBar, CharmBar. As a longtime Windows developer, was it hard to make the transition that some of your settings are going to be living in those spots?
Well, yeah, I have to say it really was because, you know, I think the idea of using the operating system that be consistent throughout every application is very unusual. I think most of us build a lot of stuff from scratch over and over again. And so there's a lot of opportunity now that Windows 8 brings to developers to say, be cool, right? Just reuse what we've already made for you so the user experience is consistent and so that you don't have to build as much to have a great application.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, you bet.
Super. So yeah, as Jerry mentioned, we're going to have several people from the local community come up and talk about their applications. We have a few of our key coding partners, system integrators who are here. We have a couple of our evangelists who are here. And then we have a couple of applications that are available in the store today. So once you get the OS downloaded, you can go out and actually install those applications. The first presenter is Kevin Stumpf. Kevin is a developer for a company called Internology, based here in Southern California, to do a lot of great innovative work around the Kinect, Surface, devices like that. Medical is one of their verticals that they focus on, although they go across everything. So Kevin has an application he'd like to show.
Yep. Thank you very much for the introduction. And before I show you guys the presentation, the demo that we implemented for today, I want to give you a little bit of background information first. So why don't we consider the following case? Let's say we have a person who's involved in an accident. He might break his arms, might break his legs, maybe something even worse. So how do we, as of today, deal with that? Usually we send him to rehab classes, right? And what does he do at those rehab classes? He over and over and over again practices the very same exercises. And while that poor guy has to do that, he's constantly supervised by some super expensive therapist or doctor. So we looked at that scenario and questioned ourselves, hey, can't we maybe come up with something more cost-efficient and provide maybe even a little bit of better service to our patients? And we came up with something really great. We call it the Personal Rehab Trainer Kit. And it consists of our software, which uses Microsoft's Kinect device in order to watch the patients while they're exercising their rehab exercises. And we will be able to analyze every single movement they make. So we will be able to give them direct feedback and tell them exactly what they're doing wrong and what they're doing right. So this is pretty cool already, right? So you might have noticed, however, that so far there's no personal interaction with any supervisor. However, we cannot and we do not want to fully replace that. This is why we came up with something in addition to that. It is a Windows 8 application that will be used by doctors and therapists in order to establish a live connection to their patient and provide them with remote supervision while they execute their rehab exercises. And this is exactly what I want to present today. We developed a C# application that can be used in order to establish a live connection to another WinRT device. So for presenting that, I want to call my doctor now, who's coming on stage right now. Thank you very much. So as soon as my doctor is ready, I want to call him. I guess my doctor is ready. Looks good, so let's call him. Awesome. So on the left side, you see the poor patient, which is me in this case. And on the right side, you see my beautiful doctor. So I would now be exercising different rehab classes. I don't know what they look like. Thank God I've never been to one. But my doctor would now be able to tell me what I'm doing wrong and right. So what do you think, doctor? Looks all pretty good? Thank you very much. So I think you got the whole idea of that system, right? So let's put that business case aside for a second because I need your full attention now. Who of you had the chance to actually browse the WinRT API a little bit and check out what it offers? Is there any one of you who did that? I see a couple of hands, not too many. I hope that will change in the next couple of months. But let me tell you this. As soon as you check out the WinRT API, you might notice that it is designed to provide you with the most common use cases. So as soon as you want to do something like this, what we did here, meaning as soon as you want to capture raw data from the webcam, apply codecs to it, send it over the wire, decode, and render it, you will have to use something else because the WinRT API is not sufficient anymore. At this point in time, you will have to deal with Windows Media Foundation. And as soon as you decide to go that route, you have to implement C++ components, which expose different Media Foundation COM interfaces. So it sounds a little bit complicated. It's not too complicated. And we managed to do exactly this. We managed to implement a C++ component. And on top of that, we built a C# application, the C# application that you just saw here. And you know what the coolest part about this is? Although this application does not only use the WinRT API, it's still fully legal. We can work with the Media Foundation. We can overcome some limitations of the API. It's all super legal. You will still be able to upload this to the App Store and hopefully make some money. However, of course, there were some technical challenges here, and we overcame most of them, and I'm happy to answer all your questions regarding those challenges later on. But besides that, all I can say is thank you very much for your attention, and I hope to see you later on.
Thank you, Kevin. For our next presenter, we have David Chow. Is there anybody out there who knows David Chow? All right, I see a few hands. David Chow's been our architect evangelist here in Southern California for about 5 years. He goes super deep on code. He was a Java developer before he became a C# developer, and nowadays he's become a JavaScript developer. Scott Kerfoot was the guy who kicked off today's event. Scott can be an intimidating presence sometimes, so any chance we get to poke fun at Scott, we take advantage of that, so I think you'll appreciate David's application.
Thank you, Kevin. So what I want to show you guys is a very simple little game that I built in using JavaScript and HTML and CSS. As you can see, the icon there is called Whack a Scott. So this is actually a little game that's modeled after the classic game Whack-a-Mole, but we fashioned it after horrible bosses, and of course, as the name suggests, it's a tribute to Scott. And let me just go to full screen. And so very simple. The rules are very simple. Just hit Scott as many times as anybody will like. No sound yet, but don't let Scott manage to escape too many times. If he manages to escape too many times, then game over. Or if you hit the other wrong bosses too many times, then game over. So very simple. It's all built in JavaScript and HTML5. And of course, because it's a Windows app, we can do many things. Like, for example, it's not just a web page embedded in the Windows runtime. Right? So we could have actually integrated into many features like settings, for example. And this is actually really easy done. It's just another div within the HTML tab, HTML page with controls laid out. So for example, I could turn the music off. I don't want to turn the sound off, where we can make change the rules a little bit to make the game a little bit easier to play. And so for example, we could do this right now. And also, the neat thing about this is because it's built on Windows runtime, it supports multi-touch very well. So you could take a double-barreled approach to this. And it's very fast and fluid. Right? So it's imagine doing this on a JavaScript app in the browser. It's actually not that easy to do. And we can, if you have any strong feelings for Scott, you could also make Scott appear all the time and make the game a little faster. Whatever. And then you just go hit it as many times as you want. So very simple. You guys get the point. Of course, the production version will make it fully customizable, so you can use any horrible boss feature that you want. And on this device, we only supported two fingers. But on the devices on the device bars, for example, our slates, these guys support 8 touch points simultaneously. So you can almost take a BFG 2000 approach to just blast everybody inside. You guys can, we have a version of this, which is not Scott, but Scott's boss running on the slate devices down there. So if you guys want to just give it a try later and put both hands on the device, you can see how fast and fluid JavaScript app using calling the asynchronous programming models and APIs on Windows RT can work. It's not just a web page. It actually leverages the underlying platform to do a lot of really neat stuff. So thank you so much for that.
David, before you go, so let's talk about it. So you learned Java 10, 15 years ago?
10, 15 years ago, yes.
C-sharp about 5 years, well.
About 5 years ago.
5 years ago. How was the JavaScript experience?
It's really easy. So I built this app really, literally just a couple of days time, off hours, right? So not even during the daytime jobs, just whenever we have time. Literally it's about 200 lines of JavaScript code, calling a lot of the asynchronous APIs we have underneath the covers. It's really easy.
Thank you. So another one of the local people we get to work with, David and I get the chance to partner with startups as well as established companies here in Los Angeles. It's our job to usher them into the store early, which I now think we're opening up to everybody, as Scott mentioned the process early. One of the companies that David and I discovered down in San Diego area, North County, is vMix, which makes an application called Givit. Greg's the founder and CEO of Givit, and as mentioned before, once you get Windows 8 installed, their application is available in the store today, so you can go ahead and download it and play along.
Thank you, Kevin. So before I get started, quickly, by a show of hands, how many people here have developed for iOS or Android before? Okay. Well, I will tell you, I'm one of the converted. I am a guy who developed almost exclusively for iOS and Android, and the conversion was extremely easy. If you're already a Windows developer, you're also going to find this great. One of our key guys that had worked on this was actually spent most of his career developing for Windows. So whatever you're doing, if you're iOS or Android or Windows, you're going to find a great time, a great platform to work with. We actually created this application, which is Givit, which is really about making it easy for you to share your personal videos. We created 3 different versions in 6 weeks. Very, very rapid development. I mean, it's really one of those tools where you really want to get on board very quickly, and you'll find it is so much fun to develop for that you'll go through these iterations. So I strongly recommend it. The other reason why you might want to download this from the App Store when you get done is that it's a great communication tool. A lot of our people we work with, including our investors and PR, they don't have Windows 8 yet. So what's the easiest way for me to demonstrate the product to them rather than flying up and seeing them? Is we actually take a video of our product in the different stages, and we actually use it to show off both the tool and the Windows 8, et cetera, in that. So if you are like me, I'm a soccer dad, so I take a lot of videos. I can take any of the videos that are on my PC, and I can quickly move them to the cloud. And we use the standard type of Windows interfaces for doing that. So I can go ahead and select any one of these. Go back. And just quickly select them, and I can upload them by a click of the button. So think if you've got hundreds of videos and you want to do that. We also make it easy to say select all, and quickly your videos are in the cloud. How is this different from YouTube? YouTube, you want that to be public, but most of the videos, like most of our communication, we don't want to be public. Even if the end destination for a video is to be public, you may go 3 or 4 or even 10 iterations before it's really that stage where it's ready to go. So again, one click of the button, and you've now uploaded it to the cloud, and it's your private cloud to use. And then what about if I want to go ahead and see videos that I already have in the cloud? Well, the interface, we have a little bit of a network connection. The interface for this is very much like the metaphor of an email. Actually, I'm not as cute as the puppy is. Puppies are cuter. So when I sent this video back and forth, we use an email metaphor so you can comment on those videos. And if you look at the UI I'm doing here, it very much takes into account all the Metro-isms. And I also strongly suggest that you play around with a lot of different apps. One of the things that's nice about our app, besides the fact of course I'm promoting it, but the nice thing about our app is it does both viewing of data and interaction with data. And I think for a lot of you, you have very complex applications, And a lot of the apps in the App Store are really about just viewing data. Here's an example. We were always looking for examples to use ourselves when we were building it because there aren't that many examples yet. You're really on the cutting edge. So this could be a very good tool for that. But we also got some design help. One thing you can see here is we work with Will Toomey here. I don't know if he's going to be here today or not. Not today, but he's David Chow's here. Great design guys, great understanding of the platform, and he'll really help you tune your app for the Metro interface. What about notifications? We have notifications here. Developing all these different features was so fast. One thing I want to show you is also the idea of contracts, and I think they've talked about a bit about contracts here. What we did is we went ahead and implemented the contract. Let me go ahead and create a new one and give it. Hold on. So I can use the contract picker here and simply take advantage. Oh, there aren't anybody here. If you're on my, this is not my machine. You can simply have literally like hundreds of contacts you have. You would have access to within our application. So rather than having to reinvent the wheel, so much of what we can do within Metro is already there. And so the big job is sort of is getting to experiment with it, try it out, get those features, and you can very rapidly create a very easy to use, powerful application very effectively. Go ahead. And for example, in ours, we have all these other contacts that are in the cloud, easy to use, simple interface. What's interesting is I'm going through this touch interface. It works extremely well with a mouse and a keyboard. What they've done here is they've really crafted at Microsoft a way to combine both a touch interface and a mouse and a keyboard interface. So I hope you all get a chance to try it out. I'll be here for much of the day. If you have questions for me, I'll be happy to answer them for you.
Great. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Before you go, so this has been pretty typical of the exercises I've gone through with working with non-Windows 8 companies that haven't even worked on the Windows platform before, to transition them to the Metro paradigm. It's almost the dev time is...
It's amazingly fast. So we went from nothing, we went to the dev camp, to a completed app that we liked in 4 weeks, and one with some help from the Windows guys to really make an exemplary app 2 more weeks later. And that is with one engineer. So think how fast it is. If you already have an app that you've already developed and it's very cloud-based and really uses standard models, you can very rapidly create an application for Metro.
Yeah, and Sean's your developer. He's really good. It felt like your project, along with the other projects, it's really about grasping the new Metro paradigm, the new user experience paradigm. And we even did some napkinning at one point. Any words of wisdom if folks are out here, they haven't created a Metro app before, any kind of words of wisdom on how to make that conversion?
Yeah, a couple key points. One is the examples they have, please compile them and try them out. The documentation may lag, but the examples all work. So that's a great first step. Be willing to throw things away. I really say dive in, try it out. Don't think you're going to have your finished product in the first one. So those are two key ones. Do learn the contracts. They're very powerful. We didn't. Lesson learned. We didn't. We tried to do just our own thing for a while. Mistake, we now are implementing the contracts. We find them to be extremely powerful and easy to use. There are some still things, this is early. I mean, you want to be early. It's better to be early than late. There are still some things that are happening in the system. Be patient. They're going to fix those, but just realize that most of what's there today is extremely useful.
Great. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you. You're on.
Super. So next we have another partner, system integrator, based here in Southern California, but they do work all across the world now. We have Mickey and David Pullman, Mickey Williams and David Pullman from Neudesic.
Thanks, Kevin. So Neudesic was founded in 2002, really to take advantage of the .NET wave. So when .NET came around, we saw that this was an opportunity for us to innovate, bring in technologies and solve problems for our customers. And from that initial custom dev, we've gone beyond that. Now we do a lot all around the .NET stack. So we're really excited about Windows 8 and Metro and Windows on the cloud. Does this one work? Better? Okay. So Neudesic, we're pretty excited about Windows 8, Windows RT, and Metro. One of the reasons we're really excited about it is because it gives us an opportunity to leverage a lot of the programming skills we already have. So a lot of you in the audience, if you're here, you're probably like David and me, really excited about innovation and early adoption. You wouldn't be here at an event for an operating system that isn't released if you weren't. But what we're finding is that it's very easy for a couple hundred consultants at New Desert that have skills in C++ and C# and HTML and JavaScript to get productive right away with Windows 8. And even though we're building these new experiences and using new techniques that you'll see today, at the core, those programming tools and those skills that you already have, you can take advantage of. So, David, you've built something?
I do, yeah. So one of the great opportunities, I think, with Windows 8 on tablets is if you look at most tablets are very popular today. But what do most people do with their tablets? They view content. They look at books and movies. They browse Angry Birds, for sure. They browse websites. I think there's a real opportunity with Windows 8 to make tablets something where you can actually get work done and see a lot more business applications. But we thought it would be fun to create and demo a business application for so we have something called Taskboard. And the idea of Taskboard is that you might be doing a project. It could be an agile software project or some other kind of project, and that you'd want to be able to put cards on a wall. And cards, that's a very popular metaphor today, and it's a really nice metaphor for touch, right? You want to be able to drag these things around. WinRT gives us these nice controls that we can, everything's touch size and such. But it's also important in an app like this to realize that Windows 8 is going to run on a lot of different devices, so we want to be able to support mouse and keyboard equally well, and that's something that we've been real careful about here, that we can support all the different types of input here. So let me just tell you a little bit about the app that you can see, and then a little bit about the app that you can't see. So you can create and move tasks here. You can I'm actually going to bring up a sample task here, so you can see there's a lot of stuff, and we can drag this around and change things and make it the way we want. And then we can arrange everything smoothly here. Now, how many of you are web developers? A bunch of you. So am I. One of the things I love about WinRT, if you think about mobile platforms in general, right, you have the choice of mobile web or a native application. And when you choose mobile web, you're working in HTML5, CSS, JavaScript. When you choose a native application, you know, it's a different language based on the platform. It could be everything from C to Java to Silverlight and such. I love the fact that I can create a WinRT native Metro application applying the web skills that I'm already immersed in. And that really adds to productivity. Now, this particular app, I started 3 days ago. And this is the second Metro app I've ever written. So it gives an idea of how quickly you can become productive in WinRT. Let me just show you a couple other things about the app here. We're going to be adding different views here as well as cloud storage shortly. But one of the things you often do in a project is you've got a lot of tasks. And whether you're using cards or whatever other metaphor, you really want to see where the big items are. So we have here a rock wall where we can show where the boulders are, where the stones are, and where the rocks are. We can, you notice there's a little bit of animation here, and also earlier I showed you this this smooth alignment here where we bring everything up. That's made possible by, I could have written something to make these cards draggable, but I used MoveTools, which is a JavaScript library already out there for the web. It wasn't written with Metro in mind, it was written with the web in mind, but it transferred nicely into the HTML5 JavaScript environment that I'm allowed to use with Metro. Likewise, I used jQuery animation for all of this. I didn't have to go create something special for Metro. I was able to adapt that massive world of online open source to Metro. So it's a great world. One of the things you see here is the app bar. The app bar is really important in applications, and it's really nicely done in Metro, and you can customize it. It's not just buttons, so you can add, for example, your own custom controls and go other places and such.
All right. So one of the things I'm also excited about, and you mentioned using HTML5 and CSS and JavaScript and jQuery, you can also use C++. And as an old C++ guy in more ways than one, I can use libraries like Boost, for instance, on a desktop without doing a whole bunch of unnatural tricks. So that's pretty exciting. Okay.
Great. Yeah, thank you, gentlemen. So everyone you saw up here, they're going to be at the app bar during the break that's coming up and then at lunchtime as well. So if you want to talk to them more, hear more about their stories, maybe even peek at some of their code, they're totally game to do that. So last but not least, before the break, I'm going to introduce Alon Swartz, who is the co-founder and CTO for DocStock. DocStock is based in Santa Monica. And just a quick plug for them, about once a quarter, They do an uncensored event where I've seen 400 to 700 people go, and it's incredible networking. It's usually a nice panel discussion, and then there's beer afterwards and some raging discussions after that. Highly recommend it. Maybe you'll mention the website as part of your presentation where people can go to look. It's my pleasure to have you talk about. Oh, and then DocStock is also in the Windows Store today. So again, if you're playing along, feel free to download it and start browsing through the content.
Great, thank you. My name is Alon Schwartz. I'm the CTO and co-founder of DocStock. And just by a show of hands, how many of you guys know what DocStock is? Okay, so for those of you who don't, DocStock is the largest repository and the biggest collection of high-quality documents, articles, and videos to help businesses start, grow, and manage their business and their professional life. So any document that you need to start your business, like an NDA and a business plan, to grow and manage, as well as your personal life, like rental agreement, a living will, and everything in between. So DocStock right now is, of course, we've been alive for the last 5 years. We have about 25 million registered users. We have about 20 million unique visitors per month. And we are profitable. I know a technology company that's profitable, and we'll go back to that later. We also, about a year ago, a year and a half ago, we moved to subscription. So subscription is basically a way for us to increase our revenue. Everyone who wants any document has to pay a subscription, which brings me to, and we have about 80, we had since we launched about 85,000 subscribers already, paying subscribers. So why did we build a Metro app? Because we want to give our subscribers the ability to access these contents, all these documents, videos, and articles, from wherever they are. So obviously we build a new website because we are a web-based company. We build a downloadable app, just a Windows 7, you know, double click on the setup type of app. We build an iPad app about a year ago. And when we learned about the new upcoming Windows 8, it was clear that this is something we want to be in. And why? Because we go after large markets. When you have a market that's about 500 million people that have currently Windows 7, all of them want to upgrade to Windows 8, that's as big market as you want to be in. What is DocStock Premium? We provide, again, the highest quality of documents, videos, and articles. So anything you need, for example, to start your business, marketing, IT, small businesses. So let's just go into one of them and see what's inside. So we collected and curated and wrote about 13,000 high-quality documents. These are documents that were created by reviewed by business professionals, lawyers. So if you need, for example, a business plan, you can come here and see the best business plan you can get. And network. By the way, while this is loading, we built this app using JavaScript, not XAML, because we wanted to provide an easy way to integrate with our document viewer. This is actually not ours because ours is a Flash viewer. This is the, here we go. This is the Office Live document viewer, which is providing you ability to view any document. So if we go to something else, business NDA. Who doesn't need an NDA when they're starting a business? So we created all of these documents that will provide you guys with high quality.
We had a little bit of a glitch, and people didn't get to see the screen, so I don't want them to miss what you're doing. So
sure.
If you could start from the top a little bit on your demo portion.
Okay. Start from the beginning. DocStock is... No, I already went to that. You see me, right? So let's go into... You see the app. Great. Okay. So if you want to look for any document about starting a business, for example, you can look through any of the categories that we have. Nonprofit. We are all for profit, so I'll get something else. So here, any document that you can actually see it. You guys can see great. As well, as I mentioned, videos, right? So the best corporate. So again, all of these videos are for you. You can see all of the videos for free. You can read all of the articles for free. And you can view actually all the documents for free. If you want to download the documents, you'll have to be a subscriber, which was one of the great. which is one of the features we actually had to build, is integration with our subscription mechanism. So it's not just some other, this is my partner, Jason, which is actually running the Startup Uncensored, as you mentioned, as Kevin mentioned. So if you want to download any of the documents, right there. So did I mention that we're profitable and all about the money? Yes. So why did we build the Windows 8 app? Because the store, and as Scott mentioned, and you guys were not very excited, well, we are all about making money. So yeah, I know technology company, it's about making money. But when you have a market as big as the Windows 8 market, this is something you definitely want to focus on. We obviously did, and we hope that this will help us grow significantly as well. The last thing I want to quickly demo is, actually, let's go to, we integrated with the search arm and others, so if we go to a business, oops, plan, right there. So any document, any article, any video, any spreadsheet, any PowerPoint presentation we have that's high quality, you can actually get it quite easily, and you can preview all of them. That's pretty much it.
Super.
So yeah, a couple questions.
Yes.
I know you were probably one of the earliest we worked with, so starting in December, right?
Yes.
And as an exercise, you had your C# developer learn JavaScript to learn how to program?
Yes, Alex right there, who's probably still happy about that. Yes, it was... It was actually easy, and I can say that since I work with Alex on the Windows 8 app, and I worked with another developer on the iOS, it was much easier. It was much easier, even for a C# developer thrown into a JavaScript, it was still easier and faster. Again, everything put into perspective, there's still issues. It's a new platform, lack of documentation. Now, for you guys, it's going to be much easier. We talk about days that IntelliSense was not working, and God forbid, developers are IntelliSense, the killer. Now it is. It's working for the most part. And a lot of examples, a lot of samples. That was, I think, one of the main things that Alec used for his development. But again, comparing to other platforms, it's weeks compared to months. And again, looking for someone who was not familiar with the platform on both of these instances, much easier.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for doing that. Super. And as Alon touched on Windows 8, there is no Microsoft cut of the in-app purchases. If you have your own subscription model, that's your money to keep. We're not going to look for a cut for that. So it's a nice little bonus on the platform. So I just wanted to wrap up and say thank you to all of our partners. Takes a lot of time to prepare yourself, get ready to step on stage, and as mentioned, they'll be over there at the device bar, maybe even show you some code if you'd like.